Hey, y'all, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. And in this episode, number 489, it is part one of a conversation I had with my friend Cynthia Yanoff, host of the Mesmerize podcast, and a guest she surprised me with, Emily P. Freeman. This is part of our sidetrack series that we recorded over the summer, and we thought we would share the first half here and on Cynthia's show, and then the second half you will find on our new podcast, Sidetracked. It has a new home. You search whatever podcast player you use, search for Sidetracked, and you will hear the second half of the show. Since Cynthia is going to give a beautiful introduction to our guest, I'll just get right to it. Here we go. Okay, so I'm looking at Instagram and I say, oh, it's Mr. Beast's birthday. He's 26. And what did you say?
Who's Mr. Beast? What
People.
Am I missing?
Mr. Beast. Who? This is our new, like, first it's Bob Ross and now it's Mr. Beast.
Is this like a Hollywood person? Because you know I don't enjoy a movie.
This is not a Hollywood person.
Is this a Christian? Is he an evangelist? Is this the new Billy Graham?
Mr. Beast would be an awesome evangelist name. No. And I only wish, like, this would be the moment where we're doing one of these surprise episodes where I'm like telling you all the stats. Mm-hmm. Like, this person has the most subscribers on YouTube. This person has given away billions of dollars of homes and cars. Like, today on his 26th birthday, he's giving away 26 Teslas.
And I would be like, Patrick Mahomes, or I'd like something. And he'd be like, oh my God.
And I would be so excited that we got Mr. Beast on Sidetracked. And you'd be like, Mr. Who? Is he evangelist?
Mr. Beast, what do you do?
Oh my gosh. You know who's going to be upset with you? I hope Brett knows who Mr. Beast
is. I'm sure. Do you know that when I was a lawyer, like when you didn't know something that you should know, this is
what
how
you do?
Like during a deposition or something, you would say to the witness, I mean, you and I both know what cardiac arrest means, medically speaking, but just for the jury, would you explain it? That means like, I have no idea. Like, I'd probably need them to explain it to me, but you just pass it off. Like, you just,
that's,
you know,
so smart.
So that's what I would do. I'd be like, Mr. Beast, you and I both know who you are, but I'm just curious, like, could, for the people listening,
And here's the story, Morning Glory. He's an entrepreneur. There was a season when my boys, like if Bruce and I were going on a date and we were getting them food, they would ask for me to order Beast Burger. This guy would use ghost kitchens. Do you know what those are?
Mm-hmm.
Ghost kitchens around the country. And you could online order these Mr. Beast Burgers, Beast Burgers. And he had each of his little friends who are on YouTube with him. You could get different versions of the burger were named after his friends.
Okay.
Now he has his own like chocolate bar, Feastables.
Well, are you going to tell
chocolate.
Me who the fella is? Are we?
This is what I'm saying. He's a YouTuber.
Oh, he's a YouTuber.
He is a YouTuber and he does all these challenges and he gives things away and he's become so popular. So popular.
Okay.
That when I said it was his birthday and you were like, who's that?
Not that popular.
Cynthia, sometimes I'm like.
I've been under a rock a little bit.
Yeah. Well.
I know. And you know what? It's, you realize you're losing touch with current events and stuff. Like when, you know, like watch the Oscars and you're like, gosh,
I haven't seen any. Who are these people?
Where's Robert Redford? I'm just kidding. That's not even older than me, but, or the music or Us Weekly. I used to read cover to cover Us Weekly. I loved Us Weekly. And now I read, I'm like, never heard of these. Well, there's a Kardashian. I know them.
You know, the Kardashians. So if I said that Kim Kardashian was going to be on here, you would
know.
No,
I know. And I know Courtney. I know them all.
Yeah. And people, we don't have Mr. Beast on today. We don't, just set expectations.
No, but our guest is a beast of her own sorts. We have a guest. She's a New York Times bestselling author of six books. She has a master's degree in spiritual formation and leadership. She's married her husband, John, and together they have two children in college and one in high school. She has been featured in Today, Parents, Christianity Today, Patheos, a lot of places. She's nationally ranked in her podcast. Has a weekly newsletter called Soul Minimalist. Let's do that again. You and I know her by these four words. The next right thing.
Oh my gosh. My sister from another mister.
Hey y'all.
Hi Emily. Welcome to Sidetracked.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here.
Hi. It's so nice to meet you. I haven't met you, but I'm a really big fan.
Long time. Nice to meet you too.
First time caller.
Yes. How do y'all know each other? Do y'all know each other?
Yeah.
I mean, our paths have done a lot of this crossing situation in the internet world, the blogging days, which is a fun word.
Yeah. Fun fact, Emily Freeman, is that my husband, I was telling him about today, my husband's not, like, he's an attorney. He's not, like, in the podcasting world, nor does he listen to many of them. Definitely doesn't listen to mine often, I figured out. But I got him interested in yours a couple of years ago because I was telling you about an episode that was so good on decision making. And so he started listening to it and he's like, okay, yesterday he said, be sure and tell her that when I decided a couple of years ago to switch law firms, I literally went through her stuff and like did all of the steps she did when he was making like a pretty,
that's a big,
pretty
job. Yeah,
big,
that's a big
decision to leave a law firm to go to a different one. And so anyway, there you go. You're hitting all the notes with all the people.
I'm so glad. It's like, he's like Harvey Specter. I'm like helping Harvey Specter from Suits make decisions. This is my dream.
Truly, truly. So he'd be glad to endorse your next
book. It's not like what you picture when you're like creating your listener.
Right. No.
You're not picturing Mikey and off.
I know.
But this is where, you know, our words just go out and help people.
Well, that is a question. Like, as we've all three of us released books. I just released my first one a couple months ago, Emily. And it has been interesting because like my target demographic would be like us, right? And then I hear like so-and-so's grandmother gave it to all the grandmother friends. And then these girls are reading it on spring break, these college girls and all that. Now,
quite a spring break.
I know. I'm like, reading on spring break. Y'all need to get out more. No, but here's a question. So as you guys keep writing books and stuff, does that change like who you write to or your audience? Like, does it change your thought process when you're like, gosh, this is a lot broader than who I thought it was going to be?
That's a good question.
Yeah, you have a new one.
Yeah, I think, well, for me, part of it, I think you grow along with your readers. And so I've been doing this for, 15, 17 years. Mm-hmm. And not a lot of people, I don't know the number, but I feel like that I often hear from readers who say they have been reading since the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I talked to a woman at a book signing, this was about a month ago, and she kind of leaned down and she said, I've been reading your work since your first book, which, if you don't know, came out in 2011. And I looked at her and I thought, we've changed a lot since then, haven't we? And she said, we sure have.
Wow.
And that, I took that as such an honor, because sometimes as a writer, you want to take back the words you wrote 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'll take that one, thank you very much. But unfortunately, there's not a machine that will go and collect books that you wrote 10 years ago from every bedside table around the world. And it's not that I wish I wouldn't have written it, but it is, you become a better writer over time. You're like, oh, I would have said this differently or whatever. So it was helpful to have it acknowledged that, you know, it might even be the same reader, but is it really? Because we are all changing and growing all the time.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Emily, what did you think you were going to be? Like when you were a kid, what were you like? When I
little
grow
girl
up,
Emily.
I'm going to be, because none of us were like, I'll be a podcaster someday. That didn't exist. So two part question. Are you ready? What did you think you were going to be, or what did you dream of? But two, what do you look at now and you're like, oh, I can now see it. Like I was interested in these things, or this brought me joy, and now I'm kind of still doing it in a different format.
I wanted to be a teacher because teachers get to pass out papers and write on the chalkboard.
Well, yes.
Obviously. Those are all the reasons why the teachers become teachers. I also, I didn't know this was a job, but when I was little, I would write a lot of fiction stories. I never thought like, I'm going to be a fiction writer one day, because the idea of being someone who writes books, fiction or nonfiction, to be quite honest, seemed like a unicorn thing. Like that's, that is never something normal people do. That is like special people who are from another planet, you know, write actual books. So that was not a thing, but I did love the library. I did love to read, and I did want to be a teacher. And it's funny because I say that when I was little, by the time I became, you know, it was time to choose a college major or whatever, I did not go into teaching. So that did kind of wane, but I did go into educational interpreting for the deaf. And so I became a sign language interpreter. Mm-hmm. And I'll say in many ways, though I no longer practice that in the traditional sense of translating, interpreting one language into sign language, I do still use a lot of those skills, like the transferable skills of listening, of cross-cultural communication, of paying attention to what's being said and what the intention behind what's being said, because those are all the things that you're responsible for as an interpreter to put into the conversation. And so I think those are still things I do at both as a writer and as a spiritual director, is kind of every room I walk into, I hope to walk in as a listener. And I think that started with sign language interpreting.
Yeah. She has this in her notes and you just said it. It's like that you describe yourself as a writer and a listener, and how unique that is, that most people are like, I'm a speaker, I'm an author, I'm putting things out there. And it's like, oh, there's an actual gift. And to all you parents out there who have kids, that this is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
So few people are like labeling listener.
Yeah.
And as a spiritual director, I remember you were starting that out when we were last face-to-face pre-pandemic. It's like, I watched you do it. I watched you maneuver a group and listen to people. And at the time, I think we were talking a lot about race and relationships and how that integrated with our different work we were doing. And you were such a good listener.
Mm-hmm.
I was inspired. So, okay, one, here's my two-part question. One, I do think some of us are wired a little bit for listening, and that's a gift. And two, it's something we could be better at. And what have you found that you've leaned into, or what tip could you give to someone to kind of fine tune the listening?
I do think some of us are predisposed to listening more than others. I think for some of us, it may have started young, where we were just more comfortable being in the background even and paying attention in that way. And I think that's a personality thing. I also hear a lot from people who, because I do some part of my work is as a spiritual director, and because of that, I'll hear from people who are interested in pursuing spiritual direction, either as a directee to find a spiritual director or offering the practice, the art form of it. And they'll often ask, like, well, how can I know? Like, do we just get to choose? I mean, how can we know if it's a thing for us? And I do think, you know, my own spiritual director supervisor, she has some really good questions to ask yourself if you are thinking about wanting to maybe become a spiritual director, which is a form of listening. It's not the only form, but she talks about, like, you know, do people in your life point out your ability to listen, to connect dots, to hold space for others? How comfortable are you holding silence? Mm-hmm. How comfortable are you witnessing and bearing witness to the pain of others without feeling compelled to fix it? Mm. So these are some questions that I think are good to ask ourselves if we are considering a listening profession. But just as people who are humans in the world among humans, what might it look like to cultivate the practice of listening? I think it starts with, first of all, someone who would ask that question, I think, is already ahead of the game.
Me. She's talking about me, Cynthia.
No, I'm literally sitting here thinking I can't hold silence. And I start.
Like, I'm sitting here listening and she wants to say something so bad. She wants to interrupt you.
No, it's not that I want to interrupt you at all. It's just that if it gets awkward silent, and not with you, Emily, just in general, I mean, I jump in there and put my foot in my mouth and say like something. I'm like, oh my gosh, shut up. So like, I'm hearing you say this. I'm like, you're right. Like, some of us are like predisposed and can lean into it and sit in it. You and Heather, and apparently I don't have that. Continue, Emily.
I would be curious to ask you if you have ever experienced silence that was not awkward.
Like, I would say yes. Like, oh, this is good, Emily. And I'm already so taken by your voice because I listen to your podcast. I feel like I could just like snuggle in. I don't find it uncomfortable if I'm in the car, like with my husband, or, you know, I have a teenage son, and, you know, there have been a few words. That doesn't bother me. Like, family members. But if I'm in the car, like even with you, Heather, and we didn't talk for a couple of stoplights, I'd be like, oh gosh.
What would you think?
Is something wrong with her? What's she focused on? Did I say something? I would go through that.
It's interesting, in the silence. Silence can teach us a lot about ourselves, because when you name and notice the resistance that you feel in the silence, you just listed things that you were afraid of. Mm. And that can be the real power of holding silence, is not just what can happen out here in the room, but what's happening on the inside. As we experience what we may first name as awkward silence, but then if we were to allow it to continue, paying attention to, okay, what's happening in me? Where am I noticing resistance? And then just noticing it and not feeling like we have to do something about it.
Not judging it.
No, I feel like I'm getting judged.
No, no, no. Heather. You have to be, I'm judging you.
I'm kidding.
But you don't have to judge yourself. Like, just getting curious. Like she said, like, oh, okay. I'm feeling, okay, this is this awkward. Okay. What am I thinking? Why is it feeling awkward? Yeah. Those are good questions.
Those are good questions. Gosh, Emily, you're so good, which we already knew.
We already knew. But, okay. But she was doing her tips and we,
oh, sorry. I interrupted. Keep going. I was attention to the silence.
Well, I do think there are situations where silence is appropriate and other times where it's not. I mean, we've all been in situations where someone was silent and they really should have said something. Mm. We've all been probably hurt by silence, the silent treatment. I mean, there's a word for it, right? When we're being punished and silence is the speaks very loud in a negative way. But then there are other times where I think, for example, if you're in a group with people in any kind of faith-based setting, sometimes I think we feel like we have to fill the silence with all our words and all the things we're learning and all of our insight. And then maybe even when it's time to pray, it's like we feel like we have to fill that silence as well. And so I think in that type of setting, one thing that has been helpful is to just boundary the space. Like if I were the one leading that space, to boundary that space and say, I'm going to hold 2 minutes of silence, like to give everybody the expectation, like, yep, this is what's going to happen. So nobody has to feel weird about it. You might feel weird, but you won't feel weird. You won't feel responsible because the rules are, I'm going to hold 2 minutes of silence and then I'm going to then tell them what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. That way it takes the pressure off of anyone who is uncomfortable with silence. It's just like anything else. Learning to be silent is not natural for everyone, just like cooking or gardening or listening. These are skills that we can learn, but there are certain skills that are learnable that we feel like we either have it or we don't. And then we assign morality or shame or pride to it. And I think listening and holding silence is just another one of those skills that we can learn. And I think it can be really generative, especially in small groups like the situation I just recognized, or even in a setting with a friend, you know, saying like, let's just take a minute and then I'm going to think for a minute and then I'll tell you when I form my thoughts, like just sort of narrating out loud what you want to happen or what's going to happen in order to kind of distill any fear of me having to fill that space.
Heather and I were at a prayer time recently for a student that we know, a boy that's been ill. And it was a big circle of people praying and the father was there of the boy that was ill. So people started praying and then it got
real quiet.
You better believe, Emily Freeman, that Cynthia Yanoff jumped back in there 2 or 3 times, kept praying. You can't pray too much. I mean, but it's interesting we all have our different bent. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what if this dad thinks that nobody else wants to pray? And there's all these, I know that academically, but well, I just think this is such a good topic. I'm glad we kind of started there because I don't think so many of us, or maybe me, feel like we're like good listeners. And I don't think being a good listener is always valued. And as a mom, I think about how many times we tell our kids, like, get on out there, get in the conversation or go play with it, you know.
It's all external.
And trying to make them, you know, not that we want our kids necessarily to be the center of attention, but we want them engaged. And engaged doesn't necessarily feel like always listening for some reason or so.
It doesn't get the applause.
Well, anyway.
But I think that you're silent. That is such a good starting point that I wouldn't have considered. Mm-hmm. Because there's going to be people that are like, okay, now I'm silent. And there's still like a lot going on in their head that they're not listening in the silence.
Yeah.
So I think your question of like getting curious about why you're uncomfortable with it. So what are your tips like in that space and someone's talking? Let's say we've moved past the pause because I think some people need a pause to get their thoughts together. Often the introverts don't get a say because we don't give them space to get their thoughts together. So then they start sharing their thoughts. How can we be good listeners as someone's talking?
Always make it a point that the first thing out of your mouth is a question and not a statement. Mm. And we can sometimes, listen, we can be tricky. We can make statements and turn them into questions. Like we know how to get our point across, but make it a question because that's the rule. But I think just as a rule of thumb, if you're listening to someone, just do your level best to make the first words to be a question to the person, not necessarily a nosy, you know, question, but a curious question on behalf of the speaker to bring them maybe one step either, I wouldn't say closer to you or deeper even, but just for them to know that you heard them.
Yeah.
And then I would say, I would challenge you to have the second thing out of your mouth to also be a question. That you actually ask the second question and not just keep it at the first question. Because sometimes we can ask that first question to sort of like, okay, I did my thing and now I get to talk and I get to say my things. What a gift it is for someone who's speaking to really feel like they've been heard. And oftentimes the easiest way for someone to feel heard is when someone asks a follow-up question.
Yeah. Can you be quiet for a minute? I'm trying to lean in and listen. Okay, so this is really...
You got to start with the question.
Oh, gosh. So judgmental now over here with Heather. Here's something that I'm so curious with about you. And I love that you are really tackling how to make decisions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something like... I don't even sure I evaluated whether or not I was good at making decisions because I always felt like I just had to make decisions all the time. We're moms.
And you just go with your gut. You're pretty good.
You go with your gut. And I don't have, I don't know about y'all, but I don't have a lot of, I don't sit and stew over
it. Don't sit in regret. I am constantly
in regret. Yes.
I'm doing it right now about our decisions. Yeah.
Okay. And so that's a question I have for you. And by the way, you guys, Emily has a new book out that absolutely you all need. And I needed it 2 years ago, but I have it now. So I'm going to use it some more, but I needed it 2 years ago when I was making a really big decision, but it's called How to Walk Into a Room. And so talk to us just about your heart behind helping us make decisions. And with that, I heard you say one time, if you could redo it, you might not say the next right decision. Is that what you're
saying?
The next right thing, maybe just the next thing would be maybe how you would approach it. I heard you say that one time. I thought that was interesting. Talk to us about why you have such a big heart for helping us move forward in decision-making.
The people I like learning from the most are the ones who are teaching or sharing from a place of weakness and not a place of strength. So I will be the first to tell you that the Next Right Thing podcast, it started in 2017 as a result of my own wrestling with a decision I was trying to make or a series of decisions. And as I was trying to make this decision, it started to get really meta and I started paying attention to not just the actual decision, but how much I was struggling with it and how I sort of became like, why is this so hard? Like, why am I making this such a big deal? And then it's like, what's my name? How do I hold my hands? What's my tongue look like? Like you start to question everything.
Yeah.
And I realized in that process of the decision I was trying to make, how open I was to feedback. I was in a posture of listening and learning. I was like ready to be formed, like form me. I must, I want to do this well and I want to make wise decisions. And to me, it was really sort of a spiritual exercise. And I realized like, wow, decision-making, what if it's not about really the decisions we make ultimately? What if it's actually about the person I'm becoming as I make my decisions? Mm-hmm. Now that is endlessly fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. And that's where I sort of set up camp. And so the Next Right Thing podcast, the phrase, the Next Right Thing, the reason why I named it that is not because I came up with the phrase or chose it, but it's a phrase that's been passed down from many people before me, Martin Luther King Jr., Anne Lamott, Brennan Manning talked about that. The Big Book of AA is one of, adjacent to one of the steps. And so that is the phrase, but if I were to kind of redo it or maybe just emphasize what I think is most important, is not so much the word right, but the word next. It's the next thing, whatever the next thing is in this moment, because we don't always know if it's right. And there can be pressure to feel like, well, if I knew what was right, I wouldn't be listening to this podcast. But I think just, but what's just your next thing right now to the best that you know?
Silence, listening well, asking good questions and follow-up questions. And now we've asked Emily about her newest book, How to Walk Into a Room, and you are going to want to hear the rest of her answer. My virtual assistant was listening already. She's like, my keyboard was covered in tears because of just some things she's made. So if you're in a season of transition, definitely go find us on the Sidetracked episode. It'll come out on the Friday after this episode releases, and you'll also hear what Emily's getting sidetracked by, so you aren't going to want to miss that. You can find us. Go search Sidetracked on your podcast player, and I'm just going to pray for us. Lord, I thank you for Emily. I thank you for the spaces that you have assigned to her and even our journey on the internet from all those years ago, writing, just trusting you for what was next. And Lord, I thank you for how she's guiding people, how you have led her heart to be a spiritual guide. And I just pray that we would be people who sit with others, who listen well, who reflect back, and that we can feel heard and not judge, that we can get curious about other people's perspectives. And if we're in the place of making a big decision, if someone listening is right now, that we would pay attention to our own becoming story, our own trusting you, leaning on you, listening to you, being led by you, and knowing that ultimately you make right all the paths so we can find peace there. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, I'll find you over on Sidetracked.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.